This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Right it goes. They score! Off the faceoff, it came right to Ovechkin, who blasted one home. Dubois walks out in front, down low, Chychrun scores! Jacob Chychrun!
Their 50th anniversary season in 2025, they're going on a round two to face Carolina.
Moving in, Bennett shoots, score! Bennett out of the box, and to the back of the net to give the Panthers the lead back.
The Florida Panthers advance to round number two, eliminating the Tampa Bay Lightning in five with a 6-3 win.
Centering pass, Kyle Connor dishes, shooting, Nebraska scores!
Well, the Winnipeg Whiteout once again leads the Jets to victory on home ice.
Still one of the more ridiculous things in modern-day sports, wearing white when your home team is not actually wearing white. But anyway, here we go with Sabres Live, and what now, based on the results of last night and what questions maybe asking, you know, teams asking of themselves at this point in time, based on moving on or not exactly moving out, but moving out of the tournament, so to speak.
I will answer this, but I talked to Kevin Sawyer, who does the Jets broadcast for TSN yesterday, and I'm like, this is ridiculous. Why wouldn't the Jets come out with white jerseys just to like – surprise, like they need to. I'm like, number one, teams need to wear white at homes, but the white out, Quebec City used to do a white out. It was awesome, but your team was wearing white. Mm-hmm. The Jets used to wear white, you know, back then at home. So the white out was great. Now it looks weird. You're like almost supporting the St. Louis Blues in their quest to like beat your team. So anyway, he said, I couldn't agree more. Oh, and it has been discussed in Winnipeg, yes, actually to try to request to wear white at home.
What do you mean try? Like, who hasn't submitted this request for the last 6 years?
I think
years?
They may have, like, but I don't know if the league has allowed it.
Marty, going with what we often say, not even going to lie, I got tricked last night out of the corner of my eye when the first goal happened. I'm like, oh, Blues are up. And then I was like, oh, no, they're not.
The Jets.
Because of the dark jersey. And I was like, okay, this needs to stop.
Yes, it needs to stop. It would be so much better. And it would generate so much more buzz, I think, exactly, if you came out with white jerseys. Yeah. And I get it. Look, what's the Carolina owner? He, like, doesn't care. Yeah, yep. He's like, I don't like the red jerseys. We're wearing black, right? Yep. Because technically the red is their home jerseys. Now I'm wearing black jerseys. I don't like the red jersey. I think the Blues look like the home team in that game last night. Although, despite the fact that the Jets – we're the better team, and we have Darren Dreger coming up at the bottom of the hour. We'll talk about the Jets-Blues series because there was some coaches' comments after the game. There was some high hits. There was some physicality in that game. So let's put that one on the back burner because we'll talk about it with Dregs when he appears. To answer your question, to me, the biggest...
What now
from last night
Tampa Bay.
Like the Montreal Canadiens, you know what now? They played over expectation. They achieved something that they thought maybe they were going to achieve next year. Made the playoffs. You lose in five, but you were in every game. You lost Samuel Montembeau. You know what you need to fix. Like, okay, good. Like, that's a good step. Mm-hmm. Everybody that Detroit, Buffalo, whatever, would take that step. They'd say, I'd take losing in five to the best team in the East. Like, that to me, it's fine. So we know what Montreal is about. We know what they're going to do moving forward. Tampa is different. Tampa, now for 24 hours, there was already Larry Brooks, John Cooper could leave Tampa Bay to go
not
to
his
Utah.
Idea, by the way. It was written about in the last 2 days that I've read twice. So
yeah, yeah. I heard it too on Jeff Merrick and Greg Rosinski podcast. And there was, but I singled that out because that's the first one I had seen it. And then I saw that there was other places. But the idea that John Cooper, who signed a 1 year extension that is for next season, could potentially leave Tampa to go to Utah, which means that Andre Tourigny would be out as a coach in Utah. Maybe the Utah Hockey Club is looking at how can we make our team better. And with all this coaching turnaround, there's coaches available. And now maybe Ryan Smith, the owner of the Utah Hockey Club, is like, my buddy John Cooper, maybe he wants to change the scenery. Like, okay, I don't know. I thought John Cooper was going to be at Lightning for a lot longer. But when there's rumors that go around and the fact that the Lightning lost in five to their cross-state rivals, that could put the heat on Tampa to change some things, and maybe it comes in the change of a coach.
Well, they didn't just lose. They've been losing to their rival. That's the problem. Yeah. And there's, I'm sorry, but I don't see a way out of that anytime soon. Remember towards the end of the regular season, we did one-timers at the end of the pregame show, and I asked you specifically about the Atlantic teams, i.e. Florida, Tampa, and you were all in on Tampa. And I unapologetically looked at you probably the wrong way and said, like, you want to rethink that answer? So I've obviously... And
Florida wasn't giving anybody a reason to believe in them, though, at that time. Florida was kind of falling off the pace of Toronto and Tampa.
They'd never had Brad in the lineup. That's the thing. And
Tkachuk.
Well... But we've seen Tkachuk in the lineup. He's been the team. We'd never seen Brad Marchand in the mix. And obviously, he was a huge reason last night and in the series that they won. They're going to be that team for a long time that is able to just meander through the regular season, do what has to be done, and flip the switch. Of that, I have no doubt. Now,
they fooled us. They fooled us because Paul Maurice said it at the end of the year. I know. They fooled a lot of people. Let's just put it this way. Because Paul Maurice said at the end, towards like last 2 weeks, 3 weeks of the season, we don't care where we finish. Come on, Mo. Like, you want home ice advantage. No, we don't care where we finish. He kept saying it. Well, you know what? He was 100% true. He did not care because they won all three games in Tampa. Tampa goes 0-for-3 on home ice in this series. Unbelievable.
And you know why, obviously, Maurice would say something like that? Because they already had their Game 7 on home ice victory last year. It's like, once you accomplish all these things, you feel like you can do everything. Paul Maurice has believed he could do anything with every team ever since he's come into the NHL in his 20s. Like, and that's why he's still...
The Hartford Whalers.
Okay. He may not have believed the Whalers were going to win the cup and needed home ice in a Game 7. Yeah. But you know what I mean. Like,
well, back then, it was
so
Game 5
confident.
In the Adams divisions.
Paul Maurice is so confident, right? Oh, yeah. Has always been that way. So whether you want to dive into what's real and what's not, he can truly say anything, and his team tends to back it up now. But anyway, the Tampa situation is definitely, I mean, if you're a betting person, you think Cooper stays or not?
I think he's gone.
Yeah.
If I was a betting person, I think that John Cooper is going to be gone. And the
why would this
why
be?
Is because
Tampa has new ownership and Tampa is changing, or because Tampa has traded away all the draft picks and John Cooper secretly loves all the draft picks?
No, I think that John Cooper and Tampa would be one of those Mike Sullivan Pittsburgh Penguins mutually parting ways of saying, like, hey, we agree that it's better for everybody to China kind of go in our own direction. I think Tampa at this point, look, they went to three straight finals. It was really hard because they went to a finals in the bubble and then a final in when there was no fans, but it was challenging. And they won two cups in challenging circumstances. They've had their success. Now it's going the other direction. And we look at the roster and what they had to go with this year, playing 11 forwards because they didn't have the depth, having, you know, Gonsalves, who's been good, but you have Chafee and Zimgus, and we know that, like, they bring back Yanni Gord. They didn't have Bjorkstrand, and I get that's a big part, but I think John Cooper would look at this and say, it's time for somebody else. Somebody else to go ahead. Like, Paul Maurice did that in Winnipeg. Time for somebody else to take over. I've done everything I could do with this team. Time for somebody else to take over. I think John Cooper, same mindset. Probably say, it's time for somebody else to take over. And knowing I'm John Cooper, oh, it so happens that I could probably give my pick of the litter of where I want to go right now and what I want to do.
So forget the Utah rumor. Where do you think he should go?
You know where he should go.
A lot of openings, man.
He should go to Anaheim. What? He should go to Anaheim.
Why?
Because it's California. I have a feeling John Cooper would love the lifestyle in California. And that team is going to be good. That team is going to be good, Duffer. And I know they're in this search of a coach. And I think Anaheim is a very, very desirable destination right now. I think it's Utah or nothing for John Cooper. I think it's if he wants to leave, he leaves to go to Utah. If he doesn't want to go to Utah, he stays in Tampa. But I think that door is open and will potentially open, and they will make that happen.
Hmm. Interesting.
Go with his old buddy, Mikhail Sergachev in Utah.
Yeah. But I mean, Steven Stamkos would be also an old buddy too.
In Nashville. Yeah. I mean, you could see that too. If Barry Trotz decides to call John Cooper and say, we'd like you in Nashville, all of a sudden we're going to have 12 openings in the National Hockey League because all these good coaches are there. Well,
the best part about tonight is it's a game night for the Amerks, and they have an opportunity to sweep away Syracuse after winning the first two games on home ice. It's game three tonight, 7 p.m. start, and thrilled to be joined by head coach Michael Leone of the Amerks right now. Michael, welcome into Sabres Live. Great to see you again. First time this year you will not have Lukáš Rusek in the lineup. He's played all, he was the only Amerk so far to have played in all 74 games to date. Wahlberg is healthy though, so he's coming back in. How does this impact your lineup?
Yeah, Rus is, I think if it was, if we were in a kind of elimination game tonight, I think he would go. I'm not going to get into details on what it is, but he's a warrior. He's been a great player for us. He's a gamer. His ability to play, and I just think, he's played in a lot of hockey in his time over here, and he's really late game situations. His ability to make plays in pressure situations. So it's a big loss for sure, but I think at any time this year, everybody's going through it, and it'll be nice to get Wally back. Wally was playing some really good hockey for us, his speed, his physicality for a big guy, so we're excited to get him in the lineup.
And I want to go back in the first two games, and more importantly, game two. You guys have a really tough one-goal win in game one, and you turn around and put that performance in game two, winning 4-0. As a coach, you laid out a plan before game two. Do you feel like it was check mark alongside every item that you laid out on the board before the game?
Other than going 30% in the face-off circle.
Whatever.
I really like the way we played. I think in the playoffs, you see it in the NHL, you see it in our league. There's not, the game is played in the neutral zone a lot of times, and there's not a lot of odd man rushes. I think there's been one odd man rush in two games in our series. So the game is played. You don't get really a lot of ozone time, a couple of extended shifts, but I really like how we defended against that team in our own zone. Dev did a great job getting whistles when he had to, especially in the second period. We lost a lot of faceoffs, and I think it helped us. It's kind of been ingrained in our group throughout the course of the season. We've been in a lot of leads going into third periods and understanding what it, how you have to play the game and the game management side of it. And guys did an incredible job of, you know, we bent a couple times, but we didn't break. And when Dev needed to come up big for us, he did. Special teams has been great through two games, and just really like our group and how we responded, especially a desperate team that second game, you know. And the game was probably a lot closer than the 4-0 game. It was really tight.
Yeah.
But we did a great job finding ways in the third period to really play a smart game. I'm really proud of the guys.
You say you didn't win a lot of faceoffs in the second period, but you won a big one that led to Yuri's goal. So it's when you win them and what you do with them that matters.
For sure. Like the other one too, on Klager's point shot, Yuri won a faceoff. It was, we had Dunner's line out there. It was an Ozone faceoff, got those guys out there. And then Vinny Prospel made a big time call on the power play one. He put Dunner out there to take the face off, and Vinny was fist pumping after that. But it was a great call by him. And sometimes the players make the coach look smart.
Well, you also have to deal with, as a coach, you know, the loss due to injury of Sebi Komarov on the back line. Yeah, Brännström coming in. Again, how does that impact the group?
Yeah, Comey, it's unfortunate, you know, the play that happened. He's a great kid. He was playing great hockey. He just got caught. It's unfortunate play. And, you know, Brännström at the start of the series, we had, really good talk with him, as we're going to need him at some point. He's played good hockey for us. He has a lot of experience. He's played in the NHL for the last 2 out of 3 years. You know, provides a little different, probably puck moving ability and ability to transport pucks out of our own zone. So we're excited to get him in the lineup. I think with our depth, you know, our forward groups and D groups, we've been really consistent with our depths. Everyone contributed all season, and I think it's really showing now.
Sevi Komarov got hurt in that fight, but you know, it's been pretty physical. I you know, from watching and hearing, like Consolanius talked about it in between periods on the broadcast, and it's physical. There's a big difference between the regular season and the playoffs. Do you feel like most of the younger guys, like the Consta and, you know, the prospects for the Sabres, have stepped up to the physicality in the first two games?
Yeah, really good. Like Consta has the ability to, almost like we talked to him before the series, of being like a Brad Marchand, like a rat, kind of. Like he has that ability to, when he's engaged in the hockey game, when he's after whistles, like when there's confrontation in his game, it really gets him going, and he's been great. Noah's line kind of goes unnoticed sometimes. I played Noah against Connor Sheary and Finley. I thought he did a great job away from the puck. I thought he was elite. All of our young guys have been great, and I think it's been ingrained in the group of how you need to play at this time of the year. So we wanted to, you know, start this earlier in the season, and the guys have bought into it. So when you get into this atmosphere, we're ready for it, and I think the guys have reacted really well.
Fair to say that Kozak and Kulik have returned in the form that you were hoping?
Yeah. I knew it would take a couple games, especially for Yuri playing at the NHL level and then not playing here for a while. Just he hasn't played with these guys. So we put Rosie back with him, the guy that's played with him the most. And I think that really helped the second half of the game. That line had a lot of life. And then, you know, Cozy just says, does so many things on the penalty kill. A lot of times shift after goals, I'll throw him and Dunner out there, and it's probably the most confident I am, you know, like with those guys. Like they just I spot those guys a lot, him and Dunner, certain D zone faceoffs. And I think Yuri's starting to, you know, that he started to get it in the third period where he was skating and really using his speed. And I think if you would ask him, I think he's played good. I think there's another level he could still get to. And I knew the first couple of games, everyone was excited to get them back. And I was too, but it does take a little bit of feeling out to get used to it. And I think it's good that we've got through the first couple of games where, you know, our probably top guys have a little bit more, and our depth guys have been off the charts. And And it's a good feeling to have as a coach.
As a goalie, when I looked at the shot clock and it was a big difference between the shots against and the shot for, I didn't care. I was like, I'm doing my job. I keep bringing it. Like, I'll look better at the end of the night because I'll have faced more shots. And, you know, if the game is going the right way, I'm sure Devin was feeling that well in game two. The shots were climbing and he was able to get the shutout. But what's the feeling on the bench when everybody's looking at the shot clock and all of a sudden you're looking in the third period and you're being badly outshot? It's like, you know, almost 30 to 10 at some point.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's usually the other way around for us. You know what I mean? Like I think it was just one of those games where we've had them throughout the course of the season where and I think a lot of that had to do with like us not having the puck and we were on our heels a bit. But I think when you look back at the game and you watch the game back, I thought our guys did an incredible job of their big, you know, almost like Florida in a way where they're going D to D, low to high, and they're pounding it again, guys, to the net. I thought we did a really good job in the stuff we talked about, Marty, where Dev's development, like the ability to get a whistle when you need to get a whistle, yep, and then put pucks in the corners where it's not that second, third opportunity in the slot. And I thought we did a great job of that. And he had to make a couple really big time saves that he needed to make. That was huge for the group. But I thought we did an incredible job when you look back on the chances we gave up in the inner slot. It was less than about five, which is really good, but it was heavy volume, and that's what they will do to you sometimes. But I thought we did a great job getting through that, and Dev was incredible at managing his game.
Michael, thank you. As always, good luck tonight.
Thanks, guys.
Head coach of the Amerks, Michael Leone. It's game three tonight. Amerks trying to wrap it up in Syracuse, and with that, they would then be awaiting what comes next. And right now, last night, Laval was able to defeat Cleveland in the opener of their series. And not to foreshadow too much, but the two-time defending champion Hershey Bears open up their playoffs with another shutout from Hunter Shepard. So they appear to once again be on the right path after another excellent regular season. And who knows, maybe we will see Bears Amerks again as these playoffs roll on.
So when we look at teams in the Eastern Conference of the, you know, the AHL, so now Montreal is out of the playoffs, so they'll get Caden Primo back in Laval, although Jacob Fowler played yesterday. So it'll be interesting to see if they play the young college guy that just ended his college season, or Caden Primo, who's had a fantastic season in Primo. The AHL. I would think so, but you know what? I remember when Carey Price got to the AHL, played with my brother in Hamilton, and Yann Denis was having a fantastic season that year. And all of a sudden, Carey Price comes in from juniors. Bob Gainey was the GM, called Don Lever. Buffalo's own Don Lever was coaching there. Says, want you to play Carey Price. What are you talking about? Want you to play Carey Price. Yann Denis is a all-star. Mm-hmm. He's top two goalie in the league. Yep. Like, we got to think about the big clubs. So I think Primo is the guy, but they may balance it out. Fowler did get a win, and that was good for him. And Hershey, when Logan Thompson was hurt with the Washington Capitals, they did not call Hunter Shepard up. Right. They called the other guy so Shepard could stay in Hershey. He's their guy in Hershey. Yeah, so he's their guy, and they really believe in him with the Hershey Bears.
And unfortunately, Jet Greaves couldn't believe that he was playing Toronto. It was, in fact, Laval, and he was on the wrong end of it last night on a 3-2 loss.
He's beaten Toronto. That's 16-0.
These things happen. It would be really, you know, a huge step forward here for the Amerks if they can wrap this up early. Obviously, yes. With Tampa out, you know, Connor Geeky's going to be back in the Syracuse lineup tonight, and you know, they the only thing that looks different than in past years, and unfortunately for the Amerks, they've seen it every time they've played Laval, is the fact that Alex Barry-Boulet is not with Syracuse anymore.
Yeah,
but he's still in the division, so
and he's in Laval.
Yes. Anyway, that annual nightmare is not a threat right now in this head-to-head series. I like the Amerks' chances of wrapping it up tonight. I really. Super impressed with their depth, and I think you know, the absence of Rusek notwithstanding, I think Wahlberg has an opportunity playing with Oslin tonight to come in and have an immediate impact here in game three.
It's nice if you lose Rusek to have Anton Wahlberg draw in, right? So you're thinking, okay, this is a guy that can have an impact and play a big role in the game. I loved, so we talked to Nathan Page, you know, last week on this program. We've talked to Vinny Prospel before. Michael Leone has been on many, many times. I love the chemistry, the dynamic exchanges that they have and the decisions that they make. When I was in the AHL, my first year, we had one coach, Brian McCutchen. He didn't even have assistant coaches. And now they have staffs. They have, like, they look at everything. They look at analytics. I love that this is the same way you would run an NHL team. The AHL is being run at the same level, and Rochester is being run at that level. So when they're looking at the numbers, the possession numbers, they're looking at faceoffs, but it's, I love what Michael Leone says. We had 30% faceoffs. That was the only thing. Yeah, but he did point out, with a little help by us, the ones that mattered and the decisions that they made are like, right here, let's put Josh Dunn on that faceoff because he has success, let's see, on the left side of the circle against this guy. That's looking at the numbers. That's running it like an NHL team, and they're doing that in Rochester.
He's also rounding up because he was talking about it being closer to 20% after the actual win in game two. So I like his positive thinking here as he heads into game
three. There was an audit on the faceoffs after game one, game two.
Big weekend in Buffalo at KeyBank Center. Bandits are home tomorrow for game one of the NLL semifinals against Vancouver. And on Saturday, sold out show. Comedian Shane Gillis is in town. You can enter to win an opportunity to watch this from a suite. Four suite tickets. Enter now, sabres.com/Shane. Darren Dreger coming up, going around the NHL when we come back on Sabres Live.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Four games in the NHL tonight, and three teams are on home ice trying to keep their seasons alive. Ottawa, Minnesota, Colorado. There is one team that has a chance to wrap it up on home ice. That is Edmonton at home to LA. Speaking of home, the Bandits are home tomorrow. It is game one of the National Lacrosse League semifinals, and they will quickly play game two against Vancouver on Sunday on Canada's West Coast. But tomorrow night, 7:30, Banditland, bandits.com/tickets. We'll see you there as Buffalo continues its quest for a three-peat. Darren Dreger, hockey insider from TSN, with us now. Dregs, what's on your mind on this day of four games, but also seemingly infinite coaching openings across the league?
Yeah, I mean, aside from the obvious and that staying in tune with what's going on the ice in round one of the playoffs, I mean, there's just a ton from a coaching perspective. You know, how many vacancies do we have? Eight? Mm-hmm. You know, teams that are in the market for an NHL head coach. I mean, talk about a fickle industry where you go in knowing that you've been hired to be fired. And some guys like Mike Sullivan have a longer shelf life than most because of the success that he enjoyed in Pittsburgh. But, you know, now you look at, so the elimination of the Tampa Bay Lightning, you know, could John Cooper pop out into the market? I saw some speculation that connected Cooper to the possibility of Utah because of maybe a personal relationship. I don't get that sense that connection is real. And if, and this is capital IF, if John Cooper and the Tampa Bay Lightning decide that it's time, right? Like he's squeezed every drop of juice out of that organization. And maybe he believes that, you know, from an organization, from a player's standpoint, they need a different voice, which could be valid. That might be fair. My sense is from people I trust that, you know, he wants to be in a real hockey market, maybe even a traditional hockey market. So what does that look like, right? Because people want to connect automatically. Well, hey, hold on. You know, Mike Sullivan in the Pittsburgh Penguins had a mutual parting of the ways Like Mark Sullivan has made enough money historically in his career that he probably doesn't have to work. But who leaves $10, $11 million on the table? It just doesn't happen. So Mike Sullivan's going somewhere. And again, it seems likely that the New York Rangers would have interest. So there are potentially two big fish in that pond. And we haven't even talked about the possibility of Rick Tocchet, where he might resurface. So take me anywhere you want to go, Duffer, and we'll dive into that.
The question about who leaves money on the table. His name is Patrick Berglund, but that's another story for another day.
So. Okay, yeah, fair enough.
Oh, you're going back to the very tough, tough moment.
All part of Sabres Live, baby.
I know, exactly. Hey, Dregs, because we're talking coaches and changes and all of that, and last week we discussed the Sabres and, you know, at that time, Kevin Adams still hadn't met with Terry Pegula. I don't think so. Where are we at with that now? Like, they met. Where is it going? Because it's been crickets in Buffalo for the last week.
Yeah, you know what? I mean, still a lot more questions around the Buffalo Sabres from a media perspective and likely from a fan standpoint as well. More questions than there are answers. What I can tell you is that the meetings between Pegula and Kevin Adams have happened. They've taken place this week. Now, what does that mean in terms of a long-term future for Adams, what his role is moving forward? Don't know. Nobody's willing to go into that realm just yet, or potential roster changes. I mean, you know, again, we've talked enough about the Buffalo Sabres over the course of a real troubling year yet again as to the improvements, the players who could be in play, all of that. But aside from hearing from Adams and Lenny Ruff at the end of the year in their media availability, we haven't learned a whole lot more. And unfortunately, I'm not in a position today to say that here's what I know Adams is thinking. The only thing I know is that those meetings took place between ownership and Adams and that Sabres management group this week.
And one of the things that we hear a lot is the influence of Lindy Ruff, right? A veteran guy that has been around, is now, you know, was in Buffalo as a player, a coach, went on to Dallas and assistant in New York and, you know, New Jersey and all of it, comes back. Do you feel like there's other person of influence that could be part of the discussions? I have heard Kenny Holland's name being thrown around, but there's, you know, do you think there could be other people of influence that are being asked about right now?
I mean, how can there not be? At least having internal conversations doesn't mean you act on them. I've heard the same rumor. You guys have read and seen the speculation around Kenny Holland. Do I think that Ken Holland might have some interest in a higher level job with the Buffalo Sabres? Yeah, I think he does. But I could also say that to probably three or four other teams around the National Hockey League, because I know that Holland wants to get back in. Does he still feel like he's got the energy and the drive to be a general manager? I'd have to leave that up to him. Or is he more comfortable looking at what other clubs have embraced over the years? Like you see the Kent Hughes, Jeff Gorton situation in Montreal. You know, that becomes more and more real. Cam Neely and Don Sweeney in Boston. I mean, go down the list. There's a number of teams. Yeah. And it feels like that could be the better fit. But no one that I trust in Buffalo, and I will say this emphatically, Ken Holland has not said to me directly, or those close to Kenny haven't said this to me, that he's got an eye on the Buffalo Sabres. But it does make some sense, right? It does make some sense.
Because we started with Tampa and John Cooper and mild speculation as far as his future, Marty suggested yesterday that maybe, depending on how this first round goes, if teams are on the wrong side of it, they too could look at a change, which is surprising sometimes when your team has made the playoffs.
Sure.
But let's focus on LA, because Marty brought it up yesterday, and the availability of other people out there. Like, do you think it's possible LA could make a quick move here if they fall in four straight to the Oilers after leading 2-0?
Yeah, I mean, not impossible, right? You know, that ownership in LA is no different than the majority of owners in the National Hockey League. They invest big bucks and they expect to return. And there was so much promise in the Los Angeles Kings, you know, based on the ads, based on especially Darcy Kemper. I mean, the goaltending in Los Angeles this year has been terrific. It was good the other night, and they still end up losing to the Oilers. And now that momentum shift is real. And the problem that are the concern I would have if I were LA is, all right, this is the same type of team and push in Edmonton that they experienced last year. Not the same play. They don't have the same speed in their lineup in Edmonton, but you know what I'm getting at, right? Like eventually their top dogs find a way to take over, and some of their support guys have emerged as well. So I guess the answer, Duffer, to the question is, could Jim Hiller be in danger? Why not? I mean, I think of the Vegas Golden Knights and how Gerard Gallant was a decent coach in Vegas. Yeah,
of course.
You know, he was kicked aside because Pete DeBoer was available. You know, I think I may have said this last week, Drew Bannister in St. Louis, pretty good coach until all of a sudden Jim Montgomery is available. So if somebody as significant as John Cooper is actually willing to consider leaving, why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you consider, with all due respect to Jim Hiller, anybody? But I, you know, when you're looking at coaches of that ilk, and Sullivan deserves to be in that. And look, even though we in the media want to align Sullivan to the New York Rangers just because of the language used, the parting of the ways, there's got to be a deal cooked. He's got lots of interest. It's not just the New York Rangers. So I'm sure that Rob Blake in LA will be respectful of the process. They're still in the series, but if they get dispatched here, I think anything is possible.
Well, real quick, where's the best fit for Peter Laviolette, given what we know historically Laviolette can do in the first year with a franchise?
Right.
Like, the Kings are aging, are they not? Like, how much more are you squeezing out of Kopitar? So, is Laviolette a fit? Because Rutherford mentioned him in Vancouver, of course, two days ago.
Yeah.
Just because it was asked in the context of, like, older coach, young coach, whatever. Like, could he go coast to coast here?
Well, I, because of what you said and the fact that they are an aging team, it does make some sense. And the conversation that I had with Jimmy Rutherford after the news broke that you know, Tocchet had decided he wasn't coming back, he described to me, and I think he did mostly to the media, but a bit more specific with me in saying that the candidate to succeed Rick Tocchet, we want to look us in the eyes. And that's Rutherford, and that's general manager Patrick Alvin, and understand that you've got to be of certain character. You have to have a certain demeanor, and you most definitely have to have a thick skin, because coaching in this market is difficult. Mm-hmm. It is. It's tough coaching in a Canadian market, period. But for whatever reason, maybe it's just the disappointment and the roller coaster ride that the Canucks have been over the last number of years. It just seems to amplify in Vancouver above all. That sounds to me like an experienced coach. And I think of Craig Berube in Toronto, right? I mean, he's lived it. He's been down the road. He's getting peppered left, right, and center by the media here in Toronto, and he just brushes it off. It doesn't matter. Like, he'll answer the question, but sometimes he doesn't. But he doesn't lose sleep over the pestering media. He doesn't. And it feels like that's what Vancouver needs.
Talking about coaches, there was a heated exchange last night between Jim Montgomery and Scotty Arneal. Scotty Arneal was livid at the start of the second period, going off on the referees because Shifley got hit a few times. One was a high hit by Braden Schenn.
Yeah.
It went 2 minutes for interference, not unpenalized. And then Montgomery decided to break it down and say, well, that's not the hit that hurt Shifley. That was the facts I hit. And they went at it. So,
yeah.
Where are we on all that today with the, first of all, the Montgomery comments that seem to have crossed the line in how he approached it?
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't have liked it if I were the coach or general manager of the Winnipeg Jets. Like, normally you don't dive into that sort. Like, he's making a medical assessment of an opposing team's player. But we also know why he was doing it. It was pure politicking. He didn't know for sure that the Department of Player Safety wasn't going to do a deep dive on that Braden Schenn hit. Yeah. Maybe they come to the determination that, okay, one more time, Braden Schenn left his feet, right? I mean, they may have looked at that. Monty probably saw it before he did his media avail. So he's a sharp cat, man. He's just playing the game and delivering the message to the media. Nothing to see here. Nope, it wasn't about that. It was the facts of it. All right. And frankly, I know Scott Arneil pretty well. He's not wired that way.
No.
He's a calm guy, but below the surface, super competitive, very protective, and protects everything at all costs. So in the heat of the moment, and look, he would have the information, maybe not the final evaluation on Mark Scheifele. We'll learn more about that, or maybe we won't, but they'll learn more about where he's at later today. That would bug me too. Just stay in your lane, Monty. That would have been my message.
Arnie had this like heart in his throat when he was talking after the game. He was on the verge of tears. And I loved it. I loved Arnie. He was here in like a couple of years as an assistant. He was awesome. And players love him. But he was the heart right there in his throat trying to speak after the game last night.
When those wires touch, man, look out. But I'm telling you, top to bottom, the Jets, they're white hot as an organization. They're leading in the series. They can close it out in game six. All right, let's see how it plays out. But we don't know that arguably their best player, one of their top players, obviously, in Scheifele, is going to be available. And they feel like he's been targeted all series long. And the refs probably haven't paid as close attention to it.
Are the Panthers even better than people thought? And are they more directly on a line to a repeat now?
I mean, just, I think Cooper put it well last night postgame after being eliminated and talked about how there's a nastiness in how Florida plays that if you can stay on that line, that's what winning in the playoffs is all about. Mm-hmm. And everybody has to buy into it. And man, do they have that in Florida. They do. So how can you argue the fact that, of course, they could defend as long as their health is intact with all of their key players? But it always seems like they embrace that next man up mentality more than anyone. And I look at, tonight it's Sam Bennett and it's Reinhardt. No, the Marchand has a couple of points there. Barkov's doing this and they're back in. it's virtually endless how they can beat you. And so now, if I'm the Toronto Maple Leafs or the Ottawa Senators, probably more Toronto because they've lived it before, right? You know, Ottawa's working with house money and they're a real good team and they're playing terrific right now. And I have no prediction going into game six of the Battle of Ontario tonight. But if I'm Toronto,
get off the fence.
I know. Well, look, I mean, if Toronto loses game six, they'll lose game seven. I mean, that's just the way it's going to go. I mean, if their top guys don't show up, that's the way it is. But Toronto has to be looking at how Florida just dispatched the Tampa Bay Lightning. And so many of the experts picked Tampa Bay to win that series. I didn't. Not saying I knew anything.
Looking at you,
more.
Marty.
Yeah, Marty.
I know I did.
At
Florida
like
is
Button, all these top dogs.
Florida is that friend that when you played Mortal Kombat at the old PlayStation, knew exactly the code to have to finish them, and then the splattering of the blood and everything. I never knew the Leafs don't know the code. They're like just trying to finish, and they can't get the code working.
I'm trying to push Jeff. O'Dog O'Neill's buttons today, and I don't think he's going to take the bait, but I sent him a YouTube link this morning to, you remember, Austin Matthews' historic debut where he scored four against the Ottawa Senators, and I mean, he was just a dog and a bone, man. He was like driving the net, and he was doing this and shooting the puck and scoring from everywhere. I'm like, roll that out for our pregame coverage tonight. Just get Leafs Nation fired right up. I don't know. He's debating. I don't know if he'll take the bait, but we'll see.
Really? There's no response from him?
He responded, but it was more about giving Florida credit and all the guys that contribute and Toronto having to steal that page.
Well, let me remind everyone that Matthews did score four in his debut against Ottawa, and they still lost the game. Darren, we'll see you next week. Thank you. We're back.
All right. Maybe
this.
We'll have more news next week. Let's hope for it. In the meantime, enjoy the playoffs, guys.
Yes. Yep. Thanks, Dregs. We're back after this on Sabres Live.
We're back with more of Sabres Live. presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
What a show with a minute to go. Thank you to Michael Leone and Darren Dreger. And we have four games to speak of. Martin, what are your predictions?
Okay, let's start with the latest. It's going to be the Kings at Oilers. Oilers are going to win tonight. They're going to dispatch of the Kings. Stars, Avalanche. Avalanche win at home, game six. They are going to have a game seven Saturday night in Dallas. The Golden Knights are going to close it out in game six tonight. And drum roll, please. I think we're seeing an Ottawa Senators win tonight in game six, which would mean Saturday night, game seven in Toronto. Oh, for what a collapse that could be.
Well, based on where you just started and what you said yesterday and a brief snippet of our conversation with Darren Dreger, does Jim Hiller get the Gerard Gallant side of the road treatment if the series ends tonight in Edmonton?
Yes, I think a long trip back to LA, but I think yes. I think if the Kings lose tonight, lose four straight against Calvin Pickard, yes.
Interesting indeed. We will hold Marty to all of these predictions when we reconvene tomorrow on Sabres Live.